Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
All right, Denton, let's talk about the four quarterfinal games and, you know, look ahead to, you know, we don't have to wait long. I mean, it'll be a week, 6 nights, next Thursday night, next Friday night for the semifinals. But where do you want to start?
I think we should start with last night, and then we will eventually get to the Peach Bowl with Texas and Arizona State.
I want to talk a little bit about Penn State and Boise and Ashton Gentry as well, but go ahead.
All right, so, I mean, last night we had the delayed Sugar Bowl thanks to some of the terror stuff that took place in New Orleans. We talked about this a little bit while you were gone. I thought the powers that be, the people that are more powerful than, like, Greg Sankey and the people that are not football people, I thought they handled this really well, Kevin, but the game itself was, I mean, this was kind of a masterclass from Marcus Freeman. I didn't think that Kirby Smart was going to be vastly outcoached or outcoached, period, at all in the college football playoff. But Marcus Freeman really came with it. He understood what the assignment was and what he was going up against. And somehow the biggest storyline, at least from Georgia's perspective, was not their backup quarterback. I thought he actually played relatively okay. It was the fact that Kirby wasn't prepared for some of the stuff that Marcus Freeman was going to do. And the overarching issue with Georgia's season this year, they can't run the football. They haven't been able to run the football against anybody. And when you had a backup quarterback in, you would think they would lean on the running game, and they couldn't. They had to put all of it on this backup quarterback, who, again, he didn't play necessarily poorly at all. I thought he was actually the one bright spot from that for them offensively, but they just could not be a two-dimensional offensive team. And when you're going up against a team like Notre Dame, that they don't have an Ohio State defense, but they have a good defense. If you're going to be one-dimensional, it's going to be really, really difficult to beat them. So I was very impressed with the way that Notre Dame played, the mentality that they had. But I'm scratching my head at Georgia and saying, what happened to the Georgia Bulldogs team that we once knew? Because this was not them this year.
Well, no, it wasn't. And to your point, Gunnar Stockton was not the issue in this game. In fact, you realize pretty early on that their only means of moving the football was really throwing the football. Even trying to run it at got to the point where it's like, don't even try. You can't. You know this. Notre Dame has been able to do two things, you know, post the Northern Illinois game early in the year. They identified who they were, which is, we're not a Riley Leonard throwing the football team. We are a running football team with our quarterback significantly involved in the run game. And man, can we stop the run and get after it defensively. I picked Notre Dame before this bracket to win the whole thing. Who did I have them beating? Oregon? Did I have them beating Oregon in the final?
Yes,
I think I did.
I think we both had. You had Notre Dame beating Oregon. I had Oregon beating Notre Dame.
really good point about Marcus Freeman. First of all, they make so many plays and have all year on special teams. They had two near block punts on the first drive of the game that both resulted in running into the punter penalties, none of which gave Georgia a first down. I thought it was actually not as close as even 23-10 reflected. I thought Notre Dame looked to be the better team. Georgia's best opportunity was to get some big plays in the passing game, and they got a few. You know, they got a few big plays from Stockton to Arian Smith, that one early. Dylan Bell was kind of banged up in and out, you know, the entire way. But I'm impressed with Notre Dame and their ability to really get after it, even without one of their best defensive players who was not available for this game. Impressive special teams-wise. I do have one question for you, because you were on the air doing your, you know, college football show on Sirius XM afterwards. The play in which, you know, they burn basically the clock out on that final drive. It was like they burned 7 to 8 minutes of the clock. Thankfully, by the way, I had the under in this game. But on the fourth down in which they ran 11 out onto the field at the last second, and they weren't going to, their offense back out onto the field for the punting unit, Kirby Smart said that play was illegal. And they didn't say it during the broadcast. And let me just set it up real quickly. Fourth and one from their own 18, 23-10 Notre Dame. They've got their punt unit out there. And with 15 seconds left on the play clock, they ran their offense back out onto the field quickly as the special teams unit sprinted off the field. Georgia is allowed to make their substitutions to get the defense out there. And then Georgia jumped off sides. So they got a penalty, and they kept possession of the ball. But Kirby said you're not allowed to run 11 off at the same time, and that they mess that up. So what's true about that?
So he did say that, and he cited an example from 2017 where they attempted to do something very similar against Tennessee, and SEC officials, I would underline SEC in this instance, but SEC officials told him, hey, we don't like you doing that, do not do that. And then last night, you had Big 12 officials. But the thing is, Kevin, because obviously the overarching rules of college football are the same. It doesn't differ massively from crew to crew, but I don't know that there is a direct rule that says you cannot do that. He was just operating under that assumption because an SEC officiating crew 7 years ago told him they didn't like him doing that. And that's such a deep cut rule where if you're asking about it, like, I don't know how they would communicate the changes in the officiating crew on a rule that is as deep cut is that one, because I can't remember the last time I've seen something like that be done. My guess is that you haven't been able to see it since around 2017, or maybe not frequently, because of Kirby Smart.
Well, you either can do it or you can't do it, but based on college football rules. Rules don't change from one conference to the other.
They don't change, but the officiating crews might not like it. And that's where you allow some of the officiating bias into it. Well, that's why he has a
bias with the lack of a targeting call in the Arizona State game. Yeah. I'm with you. Notre Dame, well coached. Kirby Smart's one of the best, and impressive. And their defense is nasty, even not 100% healthy. It's a nasty defense, and they get Penn State, which we will talk about here in a moment. But let's get to the next game you want to get to.
So next we are going to get to Texas and Arizona State. I mean, this one was, I would say, a top four college football playoff game ever. You know, I'd throw Georgia-Alabama, the birth of Tua Tagovailoa, on the list. I would say that Clemson, when they beat Alabama with Hunter Renfrow with like 6 seconds left, is on the list, and maybe that Georgia-Oklahoma game where Baker Mayfield planted
54-51.
The 54-50. Yeah, I mean, that one would be on this list as well. But I thought what we saw from Texas and Arizona State, especially when you take into consideration who the two teams were, you know, if this happens with Texas, and let's just say we get something similar to this in Texas and Ohio State, we're going to love it, right? But I think it really captivated America because nobody really knew who Arizona State was. I knew who Cam Scataboo was because I've been watching him intently for the final 4 or 5 weeks of the season. But if you're not regularly watching Arizona State, you don't know who this big white dude in the backfield is that's running over dudes like a tank. I mean, he's doing what you and I would do when we were in our younger days. You're puking and rallying on New Year's Day just so you can get after it some more. I think that the kind of the thrill of Arizona State and the who the hell are these guys really added another dynamic to this game that really made people fall in love with it. But it was fun, man. I mean, that fourth quarter and Scataboo literally taking this program and putting it on his shoulders. He was catching passes for 60 plus yards. He was throwing touchdowns. He was running touchdowns. I mean, he was gassed at the end of this thing, but this was what you hoped for when you got the 12 team playoff, because Arizona State doesn't get in if it's a four. They don't get in likely if it's an eight, but because it's 12, you get a program like that in, and they give us an all-time classic in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. I thought it was spectacular. I thought Quinn Ewers was okay. I didn't think he was great. He was okay, but we got the birth of a superstar in college football, and he's not going to be there much longer. He's going to the NFL draft this year, but you got a birth of a superstar, which I think that made it worth it. I loved that game. It was absolutely epic. And then, of course, there was that targeting call that you alluded to just a bit ago.
I mean, Cam Scataboo put on a show for, you know, the ages. It was one of the all-time, when you're not, take quarterbacks out of it, and you look at just the other positions that typically can't impact the game like a quarterback can. This game, through three quarters, really three and a half quarters, was a snoozer. Now, Arizona State moved the football, and Texas, after their opening drive, couldn't move the football. Arizona State, you know, was right there with them, except on the scoreboard. They're down 24-8. It's pretty much game over. Scataboo throws a touchdown pass on a halfback option, catches a bomb for 62 yards on a double move, and rushes for, I think it was like, you know, 70 to 80 of his 143 yards over basically the final 6 minutes of the game and then into overtime. All the while, as Denton mentioned, it physically to the point of being so exhausted and vomiting on the sidelines. I mean, think about all-time kind of performances. You know, Kellen Winslow in the, you know, one of the greatest NFL playoff games of all time, you know, had to be shot up with intravenous fluids, you know, during the game, and he comes back out after being carried off, and he blocks a field goal, and he catches, you know, 15 balls or whatever it was in the Orange Bowl in Miami in a playoff game. This was that kind of a performance. It was one of the individual epic performances, even though it came primarily over the last 6 to 7 minutes of the fourth quarter and then into the overtimes. He ended up with 143 yards rushing, 99 yards in receptions, two touchdowns, a two-point conversion run, and a touchdown pass of 42 yards that he threw. By the way, just real quickly, Denton, he's clearly a pro prospect, and he will get drafted. He's really short. He's a competitive badass for the ages, no doubt. I think he's more about competitive will and power than he is about vision. But we'll, time will tell on that. The performance was incredible. By the way, Sam Levitt, their quarterback, made some huge plays in the game as well. So, you know, here's where... Oh, one other quick thing on a player. Quinn Ewers isn't very good. He's not. He's going back to college, and apparently $6 million on the table for him. You've been reading about this for NIL.
Thank God,
in a number of spots. What?
Thank God it's not my $6 million. That is what any investor would tell you is a bad investment.
He just isn't very good. He made a big-time 4th and 13 throw, okay? We'll get to that play when it got to overtime. But they're going with Arch Manning because clearly Arch is the future. And, you know, you can have him. Look, if you don't have a college quarterback, you can do a lot worse than Quinn Ewers. I'm not saying he can't play, you know, at a high level in college. He's to me, doesn't see it ever. He just doesn't see it, which is why, you know, he's consistently sacked and inaccurate and everything else. Anyway, there is a critical play in this game that probably many of you, you know, have seen already. After Arizona State tied the game up, they get the ball back, and they are at midfield, and they've got a third down and 15 with just over a minute to go. They're driving for now what would be a potential game-winning field goal attempt. More on that in a second. But there is a clear targeting penalty that isn't called on the field, but they go to the replay to review for a targeting on a pass that was completed but 5 yards short of the first down marker, which meant it's fourth and five, or if they come back with targeting, it's first down, and now Arizona State's moving towards, actually at that point, they would have been in field goal range, or certainly approaching it with still a minute to go in the game. Denton, you and I watch a lot of college football. At 12 noon in a Big Ten game between Illinois and Northwestern, that's targeting. In a 9 o'clock start, you know, in an SEC game between Tennessee and Mississippi State, that's targeting. That's targeting 100 times out of 100 during the regular season. And they came back and they said it was not targeting. That was incredibly sketchy for anybody watching it. It felt like they didn't want Arizona State to win the game. And by the way, there's no guarantee Arizona State would have won the game. Their kicking situation is a fiasco. It's been terrible. And they missed a couple of kicks in this game. They were on their third string kicker. So there was no guarantee they were going to make the kick. But they certainly should have had the opportunity. By the way, maybe they score a touchdown. There was still a minute to go, and they would have been at the 38-yard line or whatever. How do they not make that call?
Yeah, that one was brutal. You said 100 out of 100 times, that's targeting. I guess that was time 101. I don't understand. You know, the argument was from the ESPN on-screen official was that there was no upward trajectory. And, like, I get that. But it was
it didn't matter per the rule, though. You look at the rule, it was a defenseless receiver.
And it was head-to-head contact.
Yes.
I don't think that you need upward trajectory. I don't think that you need a crown of a helmet. The defenseless thing is the more important element of the rule there. You can't hit a defenseless player in the head because there's no way to defend himself. So I don't understand how they let that one go. I mean, if you want to dive into the conspiracies, be my guest. I don't really have a better answer for you. It heavily benefited Texas, and it really didn't help Arizona State. And obviously, the way that things ended up panning out, you now get Texas and Ohio State. Now, I would just say Arizona State, as you mentioned, they still had opportunities to win the game after that, and they weren't able to capitalize. So I'm not as upset with that in mind, but the rule itself, if you just isolate that, the fact that you had officials with the benefit of replay watch that play over and say, nah, we're good, we're just going to let this one stand, is alarming.
Let me just say this. What you just said has been mentioned many times post this game, that Arizona State, you really can't go back to that because they had multiple opportunities, including on the 4th and 13 in overtime. That doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Like, I want both. I want the 4th and 13 stop in overtime, but I want the chance to never get to that. And they should have been given a chance to never get to that. I mean, they had to withstand the second missed field goal over the last few minutes by Texas for the game to go to overtime. I mean, the kicker, Bert Auburn, missed a 38-yarder at the gun. I mean, or they would have been beat, and it would have felt much worse. But that was awful. Like, that is where you get the conspiracy theorists to have legitimate juice and substance. Because even though Cam Scatabu at that point, I don't think anybody would have been displeased to see him in a semifinal game. The bottom line is, Texas is a big-time heavy hitter. Arizona State isn't. And a Texas-Ohio State game is a massive, you know, matchup. They should have had a chance to continue that drive, more likely than not get into solid field goal range. Who knows? Maybe score a touchdown at that point. Because there was still 58 seconds left after that non-targeting call. I hated it. The 4th and 13, I don't know why you don't bracket Matthew Golden in that situation. To let Ewers actually unload that, and unload that quickly because there was some extra man pressure, I thought was stupid. And it just, it was unfortunate. Too bad they lose 39-31 in double overtime. You know what I would have hated? I would have hated had Arizona State scored, made the two-pointer, and we got into a two-point conversion. That would have been so anticlimactic to the finish of that game if we had been dealing with that. Real quickly, too, how the hell, and I asked Scott about this, and he didn't have an answer. I'm like, how the hell does your network start the Rose Bowl before this game ends. This is not a Fox CBS divisional playoff round situation, you know, in the NFL playoffs. ESPN's got, you know, paid the big dollars for this playoff. Hey, Oregon and Ohio State, you guys are going to start your game after this one ends. It may disrupt your pregame warm-up routine, but you will start it. We can start this game at 6 now since there's no Sugar Bowl. How do you allow the Oregon-Ohio State game to start while this game's still going on?
I mean, that's almost as
big. By the way, Scott did not have an answer for that.
He did not have an answer. I couldn't. That's as big of a mishap as the targeting thing. Like, how do you allow there to be any sort of overlap, especially as you are a company that very much enjoys ratings? Like, it's the easiest lead-in in the world. Hey, just stay here, and then we'll start the game. Instead, you start it on ESPN2 or the ESPN app or ESPN News or ESPN Deportes or ESPN The Ocho or whatever other 86 networks they put it on. All you got to do is hold it for an extra 10 to 15 minutes because it really didn't take that long.
Well, it could have been, you know, look, we saw Georgia Tech play almost an additional 50 minutes of overtime play with the stupid two-point thing that went to 7 overtimes. So it could have been another hour. I understand that, but you know what? It doesn't matter at that point. You know, Ohio State and Oregon will give you ample time to restart your whole pregame routine. We'll start the Rose Bowl at 7 o'clock if we have to. We don't have another game tonight. The Sugar Bowl's been postponed. That's beyond me. I mean, you know, there was we missed basically 6-7 minutes of the first quarter. I mean, I recorded it just so I could go back and catch up and watch it, but... Anyway,
it was a big first couple of minutes to miss because Ohio, like, you get to the game and Ohio State's already up 7-0, and you're like, what happened? We are so locked in on Texas and Arizona State, we didn't see the first touchdown pass with Jeremiah Smith going crazy.
Jeremiah Smith, oh my God! Should we break and come back and talk about the final two?
Yeah, I think we should.
All right, let's do that. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and the Team980.com.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings, buy one get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties, buy two get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. We've dressed over 20,000 wedding parties, and most of our business comes from referrals. Why? Because we make it so easy. Tight timeline? No problem. Groomsmen scattered all over? We got you. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Come see me at Knicks Menswear, and let's make this the easiest win for your wedding planning. Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
My keys to a win Sunday against the Cowboys. Smell test. We'll have Doug Kammer on the show. I was about to call him Joe Kammer. I don't know why I was about to do that. Doug Kammer from Channel 4 at 12 noon to talk about the big storm Sunday, Monday, maybe even to Tuesday, and maybe even a little bit of snow this afternoon. So Doug's going to jump on with us at 12 noon. We will certainly preview Washington-Dallas and talk about our preferred playoff opponents as well. All right, let's just finish up with the two college football playoff games that we have not talked about. Denton, you want to go to Ohio State next?
Yeah, let's do Ohio State and Oregon in the Rose Bowl. This was the game that I thought was going to be the best game of this round, and it ended up being one of the worst games because Ohio State was so unbelievably good. Their defense, you know, the offense scored 41, Kevin, and that's great. And people were concerned about the offense because the last time they lost was to Michigan, and they scored like 10 points. Understood. Defensively, though, they are the best team in college football since those Georgia teams. With your Jalen Carters, Jordan Davises, and all these dudes, they're like on the Philadelphia Eagles roster. This defense is lights out. They did not allow Oregon an opportunity to breathe. And even when there was a slight sliver when Oregon scored to start the second half, on their next offensive drive, it was lights out. Because Ohio State said, all right, we're not playing around here. You guys had your little scoring touchdown drive. We're going to clamp you again. Now, credit to Oregon. They're the first team since them in early October to score more than two touchdowns against Ohio State. But they are the only team that has scored more than two touchdowns against this Ohio State team.
There's 34 to nothing, people, in this game.
I mean, they were destroying them. It was so fun to watch Ohio State's defense. Offense, obviously, with Jeremiah Smith and Will Howard had some dimes, but the defense, to me, was the biggest story.
For all of you that just kind of tune into college football this time of year, Jeremiah Smith has been an absolute beast, as has all of their skilled position players, for that matter. He's not eligible for the draft. He is a freshman. We're 2 years away from him being eligible for the draft. But yes, he is, you know, a massive sort of prospect at wide receiver. He's big. He's strong. His hands are massive. He's a hands catcher. He does everything. I think you were really spot on to start with them defensively. Oregon had no prayer. And, you know, all the times we would talk about Oregon this year, and I would tell you, I just don't feel confident in Dillon Gabriel. And he ended up having a great game against a really good defensive team in Penn State in the Big Ten title game. But he's just too short. You know, he has all of the intangibles. He's got a good quick release. He's mobile. He's just too short against NFL players, and that's what you're up against when you're playing Ohio State. He couldn't see it, and they couldn't run the football. It was over. By the way, I thought Will Howard was really good for the second straight game after, you know, kind of a game in which he, you know, gagged a little bit, as the whole team did against Michigan. So I'll ask you this question, because it seems to be now, for many, a foregone conclusion that Ohio State is going to win the national championship because they are clearly the best team. You say what?
I would say yes. I would say if you wanted to bet Ohio State winning the national championship, that boat has sailed. I think now they're like, they might be plus 120. By the way, one thing we didn't mention, Oregon ran 28 carries, Kevin, minus 23 yards.
Yeah, a lot of that was sack
yardage.
But Jordan James, their big back, I think had like 10 yards rushing.
He had seven carries for 14 yards.
Seven for 14.
Whereas Ohio State had nearly 500 yards of total offense, and then that. Yeah, right now Ohio State at FanDuel is plus 100. Notre Dame plus 350. Texas plus 400. Penn State plus 450. So a pretty sizable favorite is Ohio State. The answer to that is yes, because they're the most complete team. You know, Notre Dame is really good on defense. They can run the ball, but if they get down 10 points late in the game, what are you going to do? You're going to ball on Riley Leonard?
That's got to be a game that stays in context, you know, as winnable. You can't be behind and ask Riley Leonard to beat you.
And no. You can say the same thing potentially for Penn State. I think Aller's better than Leonard when it comes to throwing the football, but he's not a great, you know, clutch thrower of the football against good teams. They've already seen Ohio State, and it didn't look that well for Drew Aller. I mean, Texas is the one, I guess, that you would think would have the best shot just because Quinn Ewers is better than the other two. But as we had just discussed, Quinn Ewers isn't exactly elite at really anything for that matter. And Texas's offense, in terms of skill position guys, while Matthew Golden has been really good down the stretch of the season, they don't have a Xavier Worthy or an Adonai Mitchell the way that they did last season. I mean, Sark is the best offensive play caller in the sport, but he's only as good as his quarterback is going to be. So, yeah, Ohio State is the definitive favorite, and maybe you want to jump on him to win it at plus 100, but the ship sailed because prior to the game against Oregon, I think they were like plus 400.
Yeah, so I'll come back to my answer on that. But real quickly, let's just real quickly address the New Year's Eve game. Penn State over Boise State, 31-14. Go ahead. You take the first swing at it.
I thought Boise State played really well.
I did too.
I thought Boise State, you know, the score didn't showcase how they played. They really showcased an ability. It was very clear Penn State, and we knew this was going to be the situation coming in, We're going to stop Ash and Gentry at all costs. We're going to sell out to stop the run. You're going to have to beat us by throwing the ball. And Boise State showcased the ability to at least move it. They only score 14 points. When they got down in the red zone, there were some execution issues that obviously stopped them from scoring more points. But they did show an ability to move the football against a power four defense, and one of the better defenses that was still remaining in the college football playoff. So obviously the score doesn't make it look like they were really, really in it. But I thought they did a good job hanging with Penn State for a majority of the football game.
From this dude, Tyler. Tyler wrote, "God, you talked up you." He said, "You guys," as I'm assuming he means the two of us, "talked up Ashton Gentry all year long. Not prime time. Not an NFL back, dude." I don't know what you were watching, Tyler, but this is one of those examples where, you know, even a non-expert, and we're not experts, can say you don't know what you're talking about. Ashton Gentry's 30 carries for 104 yards were some of the toughest, you know, best feet, best vision, 104 yards. They loaded the box with 8 on every play, and that was their only goal, was to stop him, and he still ended up being the only the second back this year to rush for more than 100 against Penn State. I actually think in many ways he raised his profile for the NFL in this game. I thought that was one of the worst takes I've ever heard if you actually watched the game. The key to this game is Boise State kept turning the ball over. And they moved the football. They rolled up yards. The quarterback hit some big plays, but he had 3 interceptions. And Gentry did lose a fumble. And it was going on out of bounds, and the ball popped up, and it was recovered inbounds with a foot down. But I actually wanted to just get that out, that Gentry's performance, while not Ashton Gentry like against other teams this year, you know, just so everybody knows, against Oregon, he rushed for nearly 200 yards earlier in the season. He did fall short of the Barry Sanders mark for the season, but I thought they were 104 of the toughest yards you'll ever see against 8 and 9 in the box consistently. And just a talent difference with Penn State's front 7, you know, against Boise's, you know, offensive line and tight ends. But I agree with you. The game was actually more competitive. So real quickly, Ohio State, did we talk about this in texting back and forth? I thought, as the Rose Bowl wound down, I thought they were going to be a solid 7-point favorite. And I thought if it's anything less than 7, we got us a game against Texas. And it came out at actually, you said it, were you the one that told me that it opened at 4.5?
It did open at 4.5, and it has since moved to 5.5.
Yeah. So I think Texas is similar to Michigan defensively. And I don't think that this is a lock that Ohio State beats Texas. Now, Texas has a little more offensively than Michigan had, all right? But not as much, obviously, as Tennessee or Oregon had. But Tennessee's strength, really, at the end of the year was defense. I think Texas defensively has a chance against Ohio State. It's probably going to be a pick for me, Texas plus the number, because the world is going to be on Ohio State. And then Notre Dame's a 1.5-point favorite over Penn State. I like the Irish to get to the championship game.
I already bet Ohio State, but I got them at either 3.5 or 4.5, whatever that number was that opened.
You should middle it.
Yeah, I should, to make sure once it gets, because I do think that line is going to get a little bit longer as we get closer to the game. Notre Dame feels like the play, but I'm going to let that sit just for a day or two, because I definitely am riding the high a little bit of their win over Georgia and the way that Freeman coached. So I'm going to let that one sit for a day before I decide to pull the trigger on that. But it feels like they should be the lean. My fear is that the public is also going to be all over that, because
they were all over Notre Dame last night.
They were
yesterday.
Yeah. I think that's going to continue.
Real quickly, what was the request from the SEC to flip the dates of the 2 semifinal games? What was that about?
I had not seen that until you mentioned that. Was that something they made after the game yesterday, or had they made that
before?
Well,
couldn't have been after the game because Georgia lost. So I'm guessing before the game yesterday, they asked to flip. Potentially it would have been Georgia against Penn State, and that game is the Thursday night game. Notre Dame-Penn State's the Thursday night game, Texas-Ohio State. And because the Sugar Bowl got postponed and wasn't played until yesterday afternoon, I guess that was the suggestion. But this college football playoff can't do that. Those bowl games have so much built into, you know, schedules, including things like parades and things like that. That they're going to play Thursday night. It's going to be, you know, a week. They'll have a full week to prepare for the game. All right, we'll have plenty of time to talk about that next week. When we come back, my keys to a win Sunday over the Cowboys. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Caps in action last night. They fall to Minnesota 4-3 in a shootout. Alex Ovechkin, though, scored another goal. That's his third since returning from the lower leg injury. That's now 871 for him, 24 to surpass Gretzky. The Terps were in action last night. They fall to Washington 75-69. Juju Reese led the Terps with 22 points and 9 rebounds. You get the Wizards in action tonight right here on the Team 980 against the Pelicans. They tip off at 8. Notre Dame beat Georgia, as we just discussed, 23-10 in the Sugar Bowl to advance to the college football playoff semifinal to face Penn State on January 9th. In the NFL, Cliff Kingsbury has said he wants to coach again. There are a couple jobs open. One of those is the New York Jets, and they announced yesterday they completed their interview with former Commanders head coach Ron Rivera. And that's what's trending.
All right, Washington and Dallas Sunday. Keys to a win over the Cowboys. Before I get to the keys, these season finales in the NFL where one team has nothing to play for and the other team has something to play for, in Washington's case, a six seed and a trip to, you know, more likely than not Tampa Bay, but maybe L.A. versus a trip to Philadelphia next week. But also in Washington's case, it's not a win-or-go-home game. You know, they've already clinched a playoff berth, so there will be some hesitation in playing anyone who is even slightly less than 100%. We're clearly not going to see, I don't think, Biotish or Lattimore on Sunday, and we may not see others. But it's just so much easier, you know, during the course of September, October, November, and December to think about these games where, you know, both teams, but really both organizations, you know, because some of these decisions end up being organizational decisions in the final week of a season, where everybody's on the same page, where they all have the same big picture, high level incentive, which is to win the game at any cost. Dallas may start Trey Lance, which changes the way you look at this game entirely. You know, a totally different quarterback than Cooper Rush. Rush, by the way, may sit because he's got some big incentives that he could hit by playing in this game on Sunday, and this is a shot for them to look a little bit more at Trey Lance. But with all that understood, the difficulty of, you know, looking at a game like this one, Detroit-Minnesota Sunday night, easy to evaluate. Both teams are playing for a division title and a one seed. You know, these are the games, the Washington-Dallas game Sunday, and there are a lot of them like this on Sunday that are just kind of hard to analyze because you just don't know what the motivation is, and you don't know ultimately who will play or who will play the most snaps. I think Dallas has played not only really hard over the last month and a half, they've played well. You know, they've won four out of their last six games. They should have beaten Cincinnati if they didn't try to pick up that blocked punt at the end of the game. Even last week in Philadelphia, trust me, because I went back and watched just the condensed version of the first half of this game, the final score was 41-7. I understand a 34-point win is a 34-point win, but it wasn't that the Cowboys didn't post, that they didn't give effort. They did. Philly's just much better. And really, it was the combination of the Eagles' defense and some self-destruction by Dallas offensively that doomed them. Dallas moved the ball against Philly's defense over and over again the majority of the game, but they turned the ball over four times and missed a field goal. Remember, they missed two field goals in Landover and won the game. Not only did they miss two field goals, remember, on that November day, they fumbled and they snapped the ball over the quarterback's head. That was all in the first half. You know, and it was 3-3 at halftime, and they ended up losing that game to Dallas. Dallas, remember again, in the first half against us, two missed field goals, a fumble, and a snap ball over the quarterback's head, and it was 3-3. They had four turnovers, three of them in the first half against Philly, and they were down 24-7 at halftime. So, look, Sunday, if Dallas comes to play like they have been over the last month, month and a half, you know, it's really since the Washington game, I wouldn't be surprised if this game is close. If Cooper Rush plays, if Dowdle plays, if they're trying to win the game, I would not be surprised if this is a very competitive game. They legitimately owned the football in the first half against the Eagles last week. They were 5-for-8 on third down. It was just the turnovers in the midst of some longer drives that cost them dearly. Rico Dowdle went for 100-plus yards again. Four out of the last five games, Dowdle has rushed for over 100 yards. So that's where you start. It's almost now on repeat for me in terms of the keys to win against any opponent. Washington beats Dallas on Sunday if, number one, they stop the run. They just haven't been a good run-stopping team. They're 30th in the league in average yards per carry against. They're giving up the third most yards per carry of any defense in the NFL. Last week, the number one reason Atlanta took a 10-point lead to the break, and it should have been more, was Washington could not stop the run. You know, Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier averaged 6.3 yards per carry in that first half. This is a load-the-box-to-stop-Dowdle situation and let Rush or Lance beat you. Keep in mind, Lance would be more involved in the run game. Rush has zero involvement in the run game. But if you let Rico Dowdle go for, 110 yards on 23 carries, and he's basically the only person offensively you have to worry about, because CeeDee Lamb's out, if you guys didn't know that already. If he ends up averaging over 4 yards a carry or 4.5 yards per carry without a true pass threat or a pass receiver threat, then the red flag that is defense and run stopping becomes even a bigger red flag heading into next week against Bucky Irving in Tampa Bay or against the Rams. Number one, you just got to stop the run. I mean, commit everybody. They've done it. We've seen it over and over again. I would love to know if there's a stat out there in the second half of this season about defenses playing heavy boxes, Denton. I don't know what Washington's got to be up there. I mean, look, going back to the Baltimore game, they loaded it with 8 in the box. They've done that against every team that they thought had the ability to run the football against them. They'll do it again Sunday. I mean, there's no reason not to do it. I mean, Cooper Rush with a run game isn't the worst quarterback in the league, and he's proven that here recently. Number two, you got to win at the line of scrimmage. You got your ass kicked in the last game at the line of scrimmage. That's really where the game was lost. Other than Jaden, they couldn't run the football against Dallas. And we've seen that, play out here recently. Right, their best runs in that first game against the Cowboys were basically read option style plays in which Jaden didn't keep it. Like McNichols had a big run, but they had so many 0, 2 yard, 1 yard, 2 yard, 3 yard runs and lost yardage runs. And they got beat up in the interior in that game. Jaden, when he dropped back, play action and otherwise, was pressured quickly. So the line of scrimmage, especially offense versus Dallas's defense, matters a lot. But, you know, defensively against Dallas in that first game, again, will they have Cooper Rush? They won't have CeeDee Lamb. Who will be playing? I mean, their ability to run the ball, Dowdle had his second best game of the year in the moment, was, and their ability to stay balanced gave Cooper Rush solid protection in the play action game and in the boot game. Dallas won the line of scrimmage in that first game. More so on defense against Washington's offensive line, but it was really the first alarming offensive line day and ability to run the football day of the season. So the line of scrimmage, always crucial, will be crucial in this game. Third, Washington beats Dallas. They got to play a clean game Sunday, man. They have not played clean games. You know, 5 turnovers against Philly and they won. 13 penalties against Atlanta and they won. They had a special teams disaster, if you recall, against Dallas the first time. Remember, they blocked a field goal and blocked a punt in that game, and yet it was one of the worst special teams days in memory. You know, even before Kevontae Turpin returned the kickoff for a touchdown, he had a 38-yard return. He had another 31-yard return. We had the missed field goals. We had the missed extra point situation. We had another, kickoff return. It was a disaster. You got to play a clean game going into the postseason. It's been since that Tennessee game that they have played a clean football game. It's amazing, really, that they've won 2 games in a row in which they lost the turnover battle -4 against Philly, and they had 13 penalties for over 100 yards against the Falcons. Got to play a clean game in this one. That's pretty much it. Stop the run. Be much better at the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball, than you were the first time, which hopefully will allow you to run the football with more than just your quarterback. Wouldn't it be nice if we don't have to see Jaden run the ball 16 times? How about let's not have him run it 8 times? We want to keep him healthy. See if we can get a big day from Brian Robinson Jr. or from Rodriguez or from McNichols. I don't know if Eckler's going to play. It sounds like he might play a little bit. But that's kind of it, man. If you stop the run Sunday and you force Rush or Lance to beat you with their arm, with the receivers they have, you better have a much better defensive result than you've had in recent games. Predictions next hour. Doug Kammerer next.